Yeah, it's Pulse with the sports. You don't need another report. Bleeding green till I D-I-E. Hold it down for the best team. We in first place, we the Celtics. Try to shoot it, we ain't let ya. Been it going when it rain. Giving fades like I'm Kyrie. You the opposition, can't score yet. Homie, you ain't even on the floor yet. Big buckets and big shots. Better check the time on the shot clock. Got my shooters on me, they wet you up. It's a 30-footer, I ain't letting up. Scary Terry with a dancing bear. Gonna light it up like it ain't fair. Dunk it on you like Rozier. Fourth quarter, we in fifth gear. I got Tatum, I got Brown. I got Marcus locking you down. Grab a broom, it's a sweep. Score 100 on our feet. Celtics Pulse, we the team. And we don't accept defeat, yeah.
All right, guys, welcome to another Celtics Pulse. I'm Derek, and we actually have a very special guest with us today, Mr. Keith Smith with Celtics Blog and also a contributor for Yahoo. How you doing today, Keith?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking the time. Yeah, we also have John with us here. Can you hear me, John?
Yes, sir. I can hear you loud and clear.
All right, and then Adam will be also with us.
Have you been searching for the best ticket deals around? Well, look no further. With TixFlix, the price you see is the price you pay. And TixFlix just happens to have over $6 billion in ticket inventory just waiting for you. They absolutely mean it when they say every ticket, every venue, everywhere. And you can save even more with promo code PULSE in all caps to save you 5% off your total purchase. Just go to TixFlix.com and click the search bar. Search events based on your geographic location. Pick the show you want, and bam, it's showtime. Sporting events, Broadway shows, concerts, and more with TixFlix.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for the email newsletter so you can stay up to date on the latest news and savings with TixFlix. That's TixFlix.com, TixFlix.com. Every ticket, every venue, everywhere.
Yeah, let's go right into it here. Yeah, I mean, obviously the Celtics have been struggling as of late. And, you know, you put out a blog yesterday. It was very interesting, you know, basically stating, you know, what a lot of rumors have gone out there, that the team really is lacking an identity. And, you know, that the team, you know, basically outside of Marcus Smart isn't putting in the work. So, yeah, did you want to expand on that? You know, and really, you know, do you think this is going to be an issue long term? I mean, obviously, we're getting to the end of the season now. Yeah, well, yeah, if you want to go ahead, Keith.
Yeah, you know, I think what the biggest challenge right now with the Celtics is exactly what I said in the piece, is they, you know, we're 60 games in, three quarters of the way in, and they still don't know who they are as a team. You know, and that's a problem. You know, that we expected things to be bumpy when the season started, because you're asking the young guys to take a step back. You're asking everybody to allow them to reintegrate Kyrie Irving and really to integrate Gordon Hayward, because 5 minutes, you know, that didn't mean anything the prior season. So you expected things to be bumpy. The 10-10 start, yeah, it was disappointing, but not entirely unexpected. Now, here we sit, you know, 40 games after that, and the team still looks as inconsistent, as bumpy as they did then. So that's a huge problem. You know, they need to figure it out. It's a challenge where a game after game, we hear them come out and say, you know, we just didn't play with enough effort. We need to play harder. We need to play more connected. That's a big problem. So, you know, this is a team where a lot of people continue to say, oh, we've seen how good they can be against, you know, the best teams in the league, and I feel confident they'll be fine when the playoffs show up. And I'm just not sure, you know, really where that confidence comes from, because that seems to be a little blind to me at this point.
Yeah, Kyrie keeps saying that he, you know, I shouldn't say keep saying it. That's been like his thing lately. He's just saying, I'm not panicking, I'm not overreacting, and he's kind of shutting down a lot of questions that the media are throwing at him. Basically keeps saying that, in, you know, come playoffs, we'll be ready in a 7-game series. No one can beat us. And it, like you said, it where is that coming from based upon the results, and especially during a losing streak? I mean, do you think Kyrie is doing lip service, or do you think he really believes that?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both. I think Kyrie knows now that going the route of calling out all his teammates and, you know, saying they don't know what it takes to, you know, win at a high level and a championship level, I think he realized that was not a good path to take. And, you know, and then I think he has, you know, really now come around to the idea of, you know, hey, we are pretty good, you know, and I think he does have supreme confidence in himself. I don't think that. I know he does. And because of that, that's why he's saying those things of, you know, no, I'm not worried about the playoffs because I'm here. You know, don't worry about it. You know, those are, you know, all well and good to say. It's great to have confidence. But when you hit a point where it's a little, you know, like, you know, that seems like maybe a little misplaced, you really have to start to wonder a little, you know, just exactly, you know, where this is coming from. And is it, you know, trying to build yourself up and make yourself believe the things you're saying as much as, you know, really believing them yourself?
Yeah. And also, I mean, I don't know this for sure, but it also could be just like, let me just say what I think they want to hear just to avoid any type of headlines, because that's been kind of, you know, in the past, what the issue he's had is a lot of the stuff he's being said is either taken out of context or maybe being taken at face value. So, no, I'm kind of curious how this all plays out. And I think what will the playoffs will tell a lot, and obviously free agency will tell a lot with the Kyrie comments. You know, what he does in July will kind of explain a lot of his comments here later on. Now, with that being said, are you what are your thoughts on free agency? You think he's gone, or do you think he's staying?
You know, I continue to believe that he's going to stay. I think, you know, when it comes down to it in the NBA, money means a lot. Security means a lot to these guys. Rarely do they give up the most possible money they can get. But, you know, then there's a part of me that says Kyrie's just a really different sort of dude. And, you know, he may be the guy who says, you know what, I'm good. I'm going to make a lot of money no matter what, no matter where I go, and I'm good to, you know, go somewhere different. So what I, you know, a little bit worry about there is that, you know, maybe Kyrie looks at this and says, you know, this wasn't as fun as I'd hoped it'd be. It's been, you know, a really trying season, and I just don't really want to deal with this. So I'm going to go ahead and move on and go somewhere else, which is, you know, obviously that'd be a complete disaster for the Celtics at this point.
So, yeah, I mean, that's, again, a disaster, yes, but I don't know. Maybe I think the team. I'm not one of those people that's like, "Oh, the team plays better without him." Even though they, you know, kind of get a little losing streak going when Kyrie has played lately. Still think, especially in the playoffs, you need superstars. So I'm not, you know, ignorant to that. But man, this just it just seems like, you know, to give a max contract and put that type of money and put your franchise in his hands. With all that's happened this year, you know, you didn't have these feelings last year. Last year, they were just playing great with him, you know, and it just seems this year has really tested that for me. So if he left, it wouldn't be ideal. Obviously, you want to bring him back, but I think they would be okay given the fact that they could still move for AD. I don't think AD is contingent on Kyrie personally, but I could be wrong there.
I mean, well, they can still make the trade for Anthony Davis, but the problem is he's not going to stay if Kyrie's not there. And at that point, now you're going to give up the farm for, you know, 1 year of Anthony Davis. That's not enough. You know, a lot of people will say, so Kyrie leaves, we just go sign somebody else. They're not going to have any cap room. Yeah. You know, even if Kyrie leaves, this team is capped out for, you know, the foreseeable future. The only way they have cap room is if really the entire roster, you know, just turns over. You know, if everybody who can be a free agent leaves town, then you know, and even then it's not enough to meaningful enough amount to do anything with. So it really at this point, you know, as you look at it, it is, you know, that's why I say if Kyrie leaves town, it's a disaster, because you really have no way to replace him. And, you know, and it's you're gonna have the people say, well, so they just re-signed Terry Rozier. He's fine when he starts. Well, I think we've all seen, you know, what Terry Rozier is at this point. So it's not I think it's one of those things where it's if you're convinced all is fine if Kyrie leaves town, you better have a lot of faith that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are going to be all-stars starting as soon as next season, and Gordon Hayward's going to get fully healthy. Otherwise, you know, I get a question where you're coming from with that.
Speaking of Rozier, a couple weeks ago, Kyrie made a comment. We're talking about, you know, the team's identity and what have you, and Rozier especially made a comment about how him and Rozier have a rivalry. Do you think there's anything to that? I mean, is that just something that's nothing, or do you think that maybe is a microcosm of maybe some dissension in the locker room between the older vets and the younger guys that we've kind of heard hearsay a couple times this year when times have gotten rough.
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit of both. I think it's mostly that, you know, it's good that you have the competition and guys are pushing each other and they're, you know, really, you know, you want to have that when you have depth. You want to have guys, you know, kind of feel like not they're playing for their job, but that there's somebody behind them that's coming for them and pushing them. And then I think, you know, when we saw the Celtics over the last, you know, handful of years become, you know, a better than what we thought team and rebuild quicker than anyone ever thought they could, it was because you had a bunch of guys who were really, you know, Ainge kind of got them off the scrap heap. And those guys were all, in some cases, playing for their NBA career, if not just to establish themselves and prove like, hey, I can be a guy, I can, you know, do this, I can be a big part of a winner. And that, you know, kind of bled all the way through the roster. But the difference was those guys played together. You never saw those teams, you know, say, you never saw Evan Turner say, well, you know, if Isaiah, you know, had missed those shots, or, you know, if, you know, the younger guys were, you know, knew what it took to win in this league a little more, those kind of things. You never had those kind of comments. And that's what's frustrating with this group, because those things continue to happen and continue to come out, you know, even, you know, here we are again, you know, three quarters of the way through the season. And that's, I think, where it can, you know, it's a fine line to walk. You tip a little too far the other way and all of a sudden it's a problem.
Yeah, so, I mean, these problems, again, the dissension between the younger and older vets, I just don't understand why it wasn't there last year. It's the same, it's essentially the same roster. Yet, last year, it was like kumbaya. What do you think changed? Is it just losing? I mean, I know is the old saying, winning cures everything, but is it just that simple?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of it. You know, when teams aren't having success, everything is worse off. You know, guys in the NBA, you know, they want a few things. They want to win, they want money, and they want to play and be a part of it. And last year, everybody got a chance to do that needed to and really, quite frankly, deserved to. And a lot of it comes in with, and this is not Gordon Hayward's fault, it's not Danny Ainge's fault, it's not Brad Stevens' fault, but Hayward coming back, that kind of tipped it one too many guys. And Stevens is looking at it and saying, all right, well, I've got Horford, Tatum, Brown, Hayward, and Kyrie. That's, you know, the opening night starting five. Behind them, I've got to find minutes for Rozier, Smart, Morris, and Baines, because those guys were all a huge part of what we did last year. But, geez, you know, Tice is back. I want to get him some minutes. And Semi Ojeleye played well when called upon last year. I want to get him some minutes. And that's where it started to become a problem. 11 guys is just too many. You can't play 11 guys. You can't even really play 10 guys and hope for them all to be happy. And then, of course, you've got the whole pressure of, you know, hey, Robert Williams is exciting. Let's make sure he plays some too. And, you know, and now you're at a 12th guy. And that's just never going to work. You're never going to get there. So I think in a lot of ways the depth that everybody said, you know, can you believe how deep this team is? They have two starting fives and, you know, all of that's all well and good, but in the NBA you want functional depth. Having a whole bunch of names doesn't really mean anything. You want to have a bunch of guys who fit and fit well. And then of course you had Hayward. His play early in the season, quite frankly, he didn't deserve to be on the floor, but it was the only way to get him to a point where he was going to deserve to be on the floor, was to get him out there and let him play and play through those struggles. So that's been almost the biggest challenge, is these guys are looking at and saying, hey, last year that was my spot, you know, and I had the shots, or I had the ball in the big moments, and I was on the floor to close games. And now all of a sudden you're flipping it to, you know, hey, two, three guys who weren't on the floor late in games, or who were on the floor late in games last year, aren't going to be on the floor now. And that's a big problem.
So, yeah, I mean, that kind of transitions to Brad Stevens. Do you think what would you say he's not to blame for this? Or do you give him some stake of the blame game? I mean, it's tough to really have a blame game with still 20 odd games left plus the playoffs. But, you know, clearly they've underperformed. I mean, kind of tough to argue that. So do you think Brad is clearly not on the hot seat, but do you think he's, like, for the first time really facing some adversity? And do you think that it's affecting him or what he's going to do moving forward?
Yeah, it's exactly what you said. This is the first time, you know, things have not gone well for the Celtics. They were, you know, they were obviously better than anyone ever could have expected, quicker than anyone could have expected. I think Brad Stevens expected to just now be at the point where they were, you know, starting to turn this thing around and be a playoff team, you know, or maybe they were in their second year of the playoffs and said, well, this is going to be year four in a row, I think, or maybe even year five. And that is, you know, as you start to look at it, that's, you know, that now the whole difference is, you know, everybody, it's always harder when you're not the underdogs in the scrappy bunch of guys everybody loves that's on the come up. Now you have expectations, and the expectations were at the bare minimum to make the finals, you know, and if, you know, and on the more optimistic side, to win the whole thing. And so for Stevens, it's been a challenge of balancing the roster and figuring that out. That's a problem. He continues to have issues in games. He, you know, he very much is the old school coach of, yeah, I'm going to let my guys play through it. I'm going to let them figure this out. Unless it's funny. He comes from that Greg Popovich mindset of, if it's really bad, you know, a minute in, I'll call a timeout, right? We've all seen the Mad Brad timeouts, right? Where, you know, we're a minute into the game and he's calling a timeout. But then other times it's, you know, teams are ripping off 15-0 runs and he's letting the guys try to play through it. And, you know, quite frankly, the reality is this group just for whatever reason doesn't really seem to have that mentality. And that's been something that's dogged Stevens for really the last 3-4 years of the, you know, hey, you got to be out there. You got to, you know, you've got to take control of the game. You know, I by no means is he on the hot seat, as you said. That's just your ridiculous talk. You just have to start to wonder if at some point, you know, is it, does the message start to grow stale, you know, when you're hearing the same voice over and over again? And what happens, you know, I think with a guy like Stevens, or what happens with this roster is, you know, people are like, yeah, but it's really only year, you know, one or year one and a half with this roster. But Smart, Rozier, they've been there for the, you know, almost the entirety of his tenure. Horford's in year three or four. You've got the other one that I'm thinking of is in year three. Jaylen Brown, you know, is in year three. You know, so you're starting to look at it as like you have four kind of main components, and it's two of those guys who have the ball in their hands all the time. They've been with Stevens. They've been hearing the same thing, you know, out of him for a while. And you just start to wonder. It goes back to, you know, we talked about it before, is, you know, Larry Bird, you know, famously said when he left the Pacers after 3 years of coaching was, I never believed a coach has more than a 3-year lifespan, because after 3 years, everybody just stops listening. So you got to kind of wonder, is that starting to seep in a little bit here? It really blew up. It went a different way than what I really meant when I put that out on Twitter. Yo, I wasn't suggesting
Twitter's a vile place, but go on.
Oh, yeah, you know, you don't go on there looking for a good
time. Come on, people are rational on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah, right? You know, shocking, stunning. You know, but it's, you know, for me, when you look at it, it's you know, we can't be a year ago, we were all saying Stevens is the greatest thing ever, and, you know, would the Bucks trade Giannis Antetokounmpo for him? To now, all of a sudden, he's, you know, he doesn't deserve any of the credit, nor, you know, so it's always that thing. It's, we live in the middle, but nobody does. Everybody lives on either he's still the greatest thing in the world and it's all the players' fault and it's Ainge's fault for getting him this goofy roster, or on the back end is he's absolutely terrible. He should have been fired 3 years ago. You know, so the reality is it's somewhere in the middle, and, you know, he's figuring out just as much as everybody else is.
Now, I understand that with what's going on with Stevens and the roster, but personally, I think a lot that has to do with this skid right now is one of the guys that you mentioned that was part of that second rotation in Aaron Baines. How do you, in your opinion, how much do you think him being out was supposed to just be a foot bruise and he was supposed to be back right after the All-Star game, now where he could be a couple weeks away? How do you think that's really affected our defense as well as our play on the floor with our intensity?
Yeah, it's been huge for the defense. They're just not the same defense without Baines on the floor. We really, you know, need to all you need to know is with Baines on the floor, these, you know, free drives to the basket and things like that, those are going to end. right? He's at least at the very minimum going to knock people down, you know, and make guys earn it. And, you know, and that's something that they've really missed, especially in this over this four game, you know, losing streak. Yes, they played pretty good defense against the Bucks, but when it came down to it, Milwaukee still got a bunch of points right at the rim and in the paint. They played pretty good defense against the Trailblazers. But again, they were able to score inside. Damian Lillard had at least three or four drives right to the basket with, you know, little to, you know, stop him. And Harkless killed him. Absolutely. Yeah. Which was just, you know, I mean, that, you know, that continues a longstanding tradition of random role players destroying the Celtics, you know, so it's, you know, so for me, it's, I think Baines will help a lot defensively. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if they get into it with a team that goes a little bigger up front, if you start to see Baines start games, I wouldn't be surprised if you start seeing the Celtics really, if Steven says, you know what, I've run this lineup as long as I can, it's time to start tweaking it. It may even be, I get to tweak it game to game based on what the opponent brings. But at the very least, I think he's going to have to look at it and say, I've got to do something. If for no other reason, just to shake things up. If you don't believe it's the best, you do it to shake things up.
Yeah, they kind of did that last year in the playoffs. If you remember against the Bucks, they were like, look, Giannis is killing us. Shemmy, we're going to throw you at him and just body him.
Yeah.
I mean, and it kind of turned the series. I mean, that series, you know, went seven games, and that adjustment by Brad, I think, was critical in pulling that off. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see what they do with the starting lineup. There's been a lot of talk about the lineup, you know, because Morris has been struggling. You got Baines coming back, and then you also have guys like Jalen, who's been playing a little better of late, and Gordon was playing good before the All-Star break and then had a little issue with the other ankle and has kind of disappeared since the All-Star break. So, I mean, do you keep running Morris out there, or do you think that, you know, Brown or Gordon or Baines when he gets back is a better option?
Yeah, I would absolutely go back to the opening lineup and put Hayward out there with Brown in, but I would have Hayward on somewhat of a short leash. He's either not playing well or he's passing up shots, which that was a big problem in the Trailblazers game. He just wouldn't shoot. And, you know, if he's not going to shoot, then there starts to be very, very little reason for him to be out there. So I would say, you know, all right, if you're not going to do it, then we're going to go a different direction. We're going to go with these other guys here and see, you know, where it goes with that. So I would go back to that group, I think. And then I would say Smart's the primary ball handler on that second unit. Let Rozier play off the ball, you know, where I continue to believe he's better. And then let Morris kind of be the, you know, all right, Morris, you guys remember how Evan Turner kind of carried the second unit? He was like the playmaker scorer on that second unit.
Of course,
big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would give that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so I would give
Brad 10% like his agent
should have. Yeah, I would give that to Morris. You know, say, hey, go out there and get buckets on the second unit. You know, there's no worry about it, because you know Morris is going to shoot it if he thinks he has a shot. Sometimes he does that at the benefit of or at the detriment rather of Kyrie or Tatum or Horford or even Brown when they're in there together. So I would let him play that way. And then when you get in those games where, you know, you're going against Philly and they have Joel Embiid, or you're back up against Toronto and Gasol's out there, that's when I would say, all right, you know, Hayward or Brown, whoever's maybe, you know, playing a little, you know, less, you know, well, you send them to the bench, start Baines, and go. I just wouldn't stick to any one thing at the moment, because obviously the one things they've stuck to so far just aren't working.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is 8-Bit Ray from the Gorilla Brain Podcast, part of the Pulse Podcast Network. Did you know that you could be using this spot to advertise your company or business? Well, I've done the research, and PodcastInsights.com report that podcast listeners are loyal, affluent, and mostly college-educated. But most importantly, are five times more likely to interact with the ad they hear on their favorite podcast than an ad from any other medium. If you would like to advertise your company or brand with our network, it's simple. All you have to do is send an email to marketing@pulsepodcastnetwork.com. I'll say it one more time. marketing@pulsepodcastnetwork.com. And we hope to hear from you soon.
I think that X factor that you brought up too is especially Gordon Hayward. You know, Derek had said it seemed like he had turned a corner right before the All-Star game. He had a couple huge games, especially against the 76ers. He was draining threes. He was driving the lane. He had that comeback block on the Cavaliers a couple games before that. And then it seems like he's totally regressed back. I don't know if it's the other sprained ankle. What are you looking for him to do the rest of the season? And where do you think he'll be by playoff time? And could he be that X factor for us going into the playoffs?
Yeah, you know, I really do, because I think we, like you said, going into the All-Star break, he looked great. You know, he looked a lot like the guy the Celtics, you know,
signed as a free agent. And you were like, all right, here it is. You know, he's doing against some good teams, and you know, he was really aggressive. That's the thing I've looked for all year. And you could clearly see it with Gordon Hayward at the start of the season. He wasn't aggressive. He wouldn't go into traffic for rebounds. He wasn't, you know, getting on the floor. Anytime he drove and had to jump, he was very cautious of where he was going to land. That all seems to be out of his game now. Now it's about, I'm just playing ball. I've got to get my timing back fully. That's still not really there with him. You know, unfortunately, we can still see that. So you know, I think it's, you know, people get angry and it's, we can't play him because he's costing us games. But if you want to be the team that everybody hoped this team would be, you have to play Gordon Hayward and you have to let him, he'll get there. Yeah, you know, otherwise next year, you're in year three where it's, you know, what is it, 35 million or whatever. And that becomes 35 million of like, man. So you got to let him play through it. Otherwise, you're going to be in real trouble, you know, going forward. So it's, you know, for me, I just want him to stay aggressive. And that was the most disappointing thing in the Portland game. It just felt like, for whatever reason, he, you know, completely let go of his aggressiveness. Yeah, it did.
Just like driving into the paint and, even if there wasn't anybody on him, kicking it out to somebody for a contested three. Do you think that second procedure that he had in the spring that essentially wiped out his whole – well, it did. It wiped out his whole entire summer of training camp. Do you think that's had a lot to do with this, or do you think this is just – it's going to take a full year to get this going?
Yeah, it's both. The second surgery really set him back because he should have been playing games by the time we hit the summer, and then he wasn't playing games until right at when training camp was starting. And that, you know, that's a huge bummer. And also mentally, you know, it's I was almost there and then I got to go through this again. So that's really tough. But, you know, I think Paul George said it best when they played them fairly recently. It took me a full year before I felt anything like the guy I was. Yo, and that was not a full year from the injury, a full year of playing again before I felt comfortable and felt like, yeah, you know, who I was. And I think that's just, you know, where we're at with
Gordon Hayward. It's going to take that time for him to feel, you know, really good about who he is again on the floor.
And George, by the way, just has looked phenomenal this year. I mean, kind of going off Celtics beat here a little bit, switch it up here. I mean, you got an MVP favorite? I mean, Giannis, we mentioned earlier. We've got, you know, Paul George, I just mentioned. And there's, you know, Harden or anybody else. I mean, who do you think right now you would call the MVP?
You know, I was a Giannis guy for most of the year, but I've switched it over to Harden now, really Harden over the last month or so. I mean, he's been so unreal, you know, and then he did it for such a long stretch when it was just him, you know, when they it was literally him and G League guys, you know, and they were winning and he was playing great. So, you know, for me, it's Harden, but it's, what's really cool is, you know, you can make cases for either one, and it's not in with Paul George, it's not a case of, you know, oh, hey, and don't forget about Paul George. Like he 100% deserves to be in there and, you know, deserves to be mentioned because he really has played, you know, ridiculous basketball at this point.
Yeah, I think what's going to be held against him is that he plays with the guy averaging a triple-double. You know, it's like MVP votes kind of, you know, in most sports, when you have another superstar performing at that level, can take, you know, take away votes from each other. So I think that could be a factor too. But I'm with you. I got Harden as well, just, you know, averaging 37 points a game. You know, that hasn't been done since Jordan. So
I'm the minority.
What do you got?
I got Paul George, man.
Yeah, he's been great. I mean, this is one year with three legit options where it's like, you know, geez, pick one.
I mean, we've seen this from Oklahoma. I mean, we've seen Westbrook do the triple-double thing a couple years. And Oklahoma
State. Yeah, he's so good. He makes it look like it's easy. And it's not. To average a triple-double.
No, it's not. I mean,
straight years. That's insane. But, again, Ford, that's
– I mean, Oscar Robinson was the only one that ever did it. So his second year in 63. So – but – I think Oklahoma City, and I think you've seen it this year, and maybe Keith, you could attest to this, or or talk about it a little bit. They look like a totally different team. Paul George's intensity on the defensive end side of the ball seems to have changed Westbrook's intensity a little bit on that side of the ball. And they seem to be a more complete team if Paul George is the one that's scoring.
Yeah, their defense is just off the charts good. Like they just get after it. They you'd love to see what they would do defensively. They'd be even tougher if you could get Andre Robertson back and healthy in that group, because that guy's one of the best wing defenders in the entire NBA. But you know that when you play defense the way they do, that really sets you in a good place, because it makes everything easier for you to play basketball. So that's the good thing, you know, as you watch that team play. And then George is, you know, he's given them everything that they ever got from Kevin Durant, scoring wise. You know, he's been just as good, you know, as Durant was in his OKC years. And, you know, he's also, George is a little more content to play off the ball, you know, and let Westbrook kind of do his thing. Westbrook and Durant was always a little clunky. And then, you know, then it was kind of the Westbrook show for that 1 year by himself. And now you've got Paul George, and it seems like they've really kind of found a running mate that works well. And then all their other guys, they complement those two so well. You know, Oklahoma City's going to be a tough out. My challenge for them in the playoffs is they just can't go through those long offensive droughts. And when they do that, that's when Russ starts, you know, all right, I'm going to be the one who gets us back. And that becomes a problem. So you just want to watch out for that, because that's really tough to get by in a playoff game.
I mean, when all is healthy, though, you think it's just Golden State, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, would still, you know, they're still the favorite.
Ruins all the fun.
You know, I think teams can challenge them, though. I think this year, you know, more than any year during this run. And, you know, I think I really think Houston believes they can beat them. They were so close last year. And, you know, obviously they were a bad shooting game away, just like the Celtics were.
Question. Do you think that the Houston beats them in that series if Chris Paul doesn't get injured?
I don't know if Houston beats them. I think it would have been close. The challenge, I mean, they missed 27 straight three-pointers. You know, I mean, that's why you lose. That's the thing. But Houston, this is one of the things I say all the time. Houston has a formula to beat them. It's, you know, Harden wins a game or two by himself. You win a game or two where you hit a whole bunch of threes, and all of a sudden now you're in a game seven where anything can happen. And that's, you know, where the Rockets believe. But I think, you know, Toronto matches up really well with the Warriors. They can really challenge them and make them work, as well as, you know, Milwaukee's would be a tough cover for them. So, you know, I think that there's a chance.
Have proven over many years, and even this year, even in the loss that we had to them, that we can match up with them. Nope. I mean, but again,
they're going to play them in Oakland, and you know, next week. And
I know
that's going to be one of those games where if they come out and get that win, you could really start to, you know, I don't know, for time 25 this season, be like, all right, hey, they figured it out, you know, and then they'll probably, then, you know,
use the next game to
the
Bulls by 20. I mean, I think you brought that up in your blog, you know, just about the one that you just recently wrote about Marcus Smart being the only one with intensity on the floor against the Trailblazers. I mean, to me, that's becoming a little bit of an issue. I really, really wanted to tick your brain on that one after reading your blog. Is that the reason why we see it for the 25th time? Because they get up for these games against the Raptors or the Warriors,
and then not so much the Raptors. These
games against the Bulls. You know, is it because they're not just having enough intensity?
Yeah, you know, I think this team has, for whatever reason, adopted a mindset of, remember back in the 2012 season, the Celtics looked like they were really, you know, that was kind of the end of that run. And then one more time, you know, those guys brought it all together. And it was, you could tell all regular season long, that group was kind of conserving things. And we're like, we're going to hold off. We don't need to push it too hard. And then they bring it together. If you want to go back even further, the Lakers with Shaq and Kobe, they used to be like, whatever about the regular season. Doesn't matter. You know, we'll see in the playoffs. The Warriors, to some extent, you know, that's why they've, you know,
put. Yeah, they've lost a couple in a row. What, four?
Yeah, they just lost to Miami and Orlando back to back nights. They're going to lose 20 plus games this year, you know, and you know, so. But the Celtics seem to have that same attitude of like, nah, you know, we can throw one away against Chicago. If you throw one away against Chicago, that's fine. But when you've lost multiple games to these absolutely terrible teams at the bottom of the standings, losing a home game to the Phoenix Suns, I mean, that's the game where you should have been able to say, yeah, Kyrie, Hayward, Horford, you all take the night off. The rest of these guys got it. And instead they come out, lay a complete egg and look awful. You know, so that's the thing. You know, I go back to, you know, a lot of people like to say, well, we've seen how good the Celtics can be when they're really good. You can say that about all 29 other teams in the NBA.
Exactly.
You know, when everybody's really good, they're going to win games. It's being really good consistently. And in the playoffs, you've got to be really good 4 out of 7 times, 3 or 4 times, you know, to get to the finals or win the title. And I'm just not sure Boston can, you know, put together that level of consistency to win it, you know, at that, because they just haven't shown it this year.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, but if you're going to try to win it at the 5 seed and go on the road essentially 3 straight rounds to get to the finals, that is a big ask. I mean, especially with the East being so top heavy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm with you here. I mean, I know Kyrie is just saying, oh, you know, in a 7-game series, we'll be fine. But man, I mean, in a 7-game series, when you have to play 4 of them on the road potentially, but that was the difference between us getting by Milwaukee last year. Now, granted, we didn't have Kyrie and Gordon, but they've improved as well. So I don't know. I just think this home court is being overlooked in a year where the East is so good, to be frank. I mean, I think the East is really good, at least one through four. You could argue 1 through 6 or 7 even.
Well, I would say at least 1 through 5. Don't sleep on the Pacers. You know, everybody's looking at it as, yeah, but look where they are.
Sabonis got hurt last night too.
What's that?
I think Sabonis got hurt.
Sabonis has been out a couple games now. He rolled an ankle, but you know, but they keep winning and they're sitting there in third place. You know, and they're tough. They play really, really hard. And the thing is, we talked about the Celtics don't know who they are. Well, the Pacers know exactly who they are. Everybody plays, just does what it is. It's, you know, to steal from, you know, New England brother and the Patriot, they all just do their job. You know, they don't, you know, nobody tries to be more than what they are, and they just play, you know, play really hard and do their thing, you know, night in and night out. So it's, you know, there's no reason the Celtics couldn't beat them. You know, if they had to play them in the first round, there's no reason why they couldn't go on the road and beat them, but they're going to have to work to do it. And when you don't have home court advantage, now you have to win road playoff games. And when you have to win road playoff games, that generally means the series is going to go a little longer. And when you have to do that, now all of a sudden you're playing a 6 or a 7-game series when you would have hoped to get it over, you know, 5. And now, you know, in the second round, you're probably going into a 6 or 7-game series. And at some point it's, you know, do you have enough left? A lot of times what gets forgotten in the playoffs is it's about having, it's not about necessarily being the best team. It's who's the best team at the moment at the end of the season. We saw that 1 year when the Cavaliers beat the Warriors, the Cavs just had enough left to beat the Warriors, and the Warriors, you know, Steph was banged up. Draymond Green got himself thrown out of a game and then suspended. And Clay Thompson was worn out. You know, Andrew Bogut was basically on his last legs. And that's, you know, tough. The playoffs is a grind. So you want to be able to get through that early round, especially as quick as you can. And the Celtics just really haven't given themselves that affordability with, you know, falling all the way back to, you know, to 5th at this point.
Yeah, and they're a 500 team on the road for the year. So again, going on the road for three straight rounds, you know, potentially when you've clearly struggled on the road is, again, this isn't exactly the path that the team probably had in mind before the season. But
I think one other thing, I think this upcoming West Coast road trip is going to tell us a lot about who this team is. I think we're going to really understand if they go out there, lay an egg and get blown out and, you know, a handful of those games and don't do well. I think at that point, it's really time to say, all right, let's start planning for the off season. They're still a playoff team. They're too far ahead to miss. You know, I've had people be like, they might not even make the playoffs. Well,
that's silly.
You know, I mean, they'd have to, you know, they'd have to just out and out lose almost all of them the rest of the way to not get there.
We can talk about Brad's job if that happens.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but at this point, it's – Yo, but if they go out and they give a great effort and they win a handful of those games, yo, on the on this West Coast trip, all of a sudden then you can start to, you know, buy in a little bit more and say, all right, you know, maybe they all have put whatever was going on behind them and they figured it out. But again, it feels like we've had that conversation 25 times this year, and you know, here we are and still don't know for sure.
Well, I think revenge should be a big part of this West Coast trip too. Lakers and Warriors specifically. Now, those are two games you had at home that you could have and probably should have won. So I if they don't get up for those games and at least make the Warriors game competitive, and I think they have to beat the Lakers. I'm sorry. Yeah, I mean, Lakers outside of LeBron they're just not as the team that the Celtics are. So I don't know. Those are the two games I have circled.
Yeah, no, and they should do well in those games.
They should.
They should, but anytime we've said that, we've been wrong. So, all right, before we wrap this up here, Keith, how about this? What is your prediction on how this season will end? Is it semifinals? Is it Eastern Conference Finals, et cetera? Or is it the finals, NBA champions, et cetera? What's your guess here?
Yeah, I think they're going to get to the conference finals. I still believe that they'll get that far. But then, you know, whether it's Milwaukee or Toronto, I think it's just going to be at that point, they're going to have had to work so hard to get there. I think they'll run out of gas, and that'll be the thing. And now what you want to watch out for is if they can stay on the opposite side of Philly and Philly can pull off those upsets and get there. Well, then, you know, we obviously feel pretty good about their chances against the Sixers because they've shown that. But I do think this team will, you know, pull together enough to get at least to the conference finals. And hopefully that's enough for guys to say, all right, we kind of think we know who we are, and, you know, and then see what the summer brings, because it's probably going to be a summer, you know, pretty big change.
Yeah, I agree. This is a big summer. That cannot be understated. I mean, that's for the whole NBA, though. This might be the biggest summer in the NBA that I can remember. You got Durant potentially moving. I mean, you got Kyrie. You've got Anthony Davis saga. This is going to be fun.
Yeah.
Not to mention some, you know, players that a lot of people won't, like Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker could be a very good player for a lot of teams out there, but do you think, you know, if we don't make the finals, obviously that was our preseason prediction for a lot of us. Do you consider this Celtics year a failure, or conference finals good enough, or where do you draw the line of saying this was a good season, this was a bad season for the Celtics?
Yeah, as long as they, even if they go out in the second round, but it's a really good competitive series against a team that had a, you know, far better regular season, then I think you can say, hey, you know, the East, you know, ended up with four really, really good teams, you know, five if you want to include the Pacers in there. But even if you don't, you know, Boston, Philly, Toronto, Milwaukee, you know, you lose to the Bucks or the Raptors. As long as it's a competitive series in that second round, I think you can still feel pretty good about where the season went, just with how good those teams are. Anything beyond that, I think you feel increasingly better about it. You know, if they lose in the first round, or they get through the first round and they get blown out in the second round, yeah, then the season was obviously a disappointment and a failure from where we expected them to be.
All right, last question, Keith. What's your finals prediction?
At this point, I'm going to go with the Warriors over the Raptors. I think Toronto has shown a lot. I worry about the Bucks in the playoffs. Budenholzer's playoff track record has not been all that good. So I'm going to go with Warriors over Raptors. And, you know, we'll see, you know, who's healthy when we get to the end of the regular season and whatnot at that point. You know, unfortunately, you know, we every year we get some late injury that kind of wrecks things for one team or another. But that's where I would go right now. I just think Toronto's got the depth to pull it off. And the Bucks are just there's a couple questions that I worry about with them.
Yeah, so I mean, so you clearly have the Celtics beating the Bucks in the second round, assuming we're the 4 or 5 seed.
Yeah, and that's what I think is going to happen. I think Boston's going to get into the 4 seed. I think Indiana's schedule is just brutal coming up. You know, it's really hard. So I think they're going to fall back. I think Boston gets into the 4 seed. I do think that they can beat the Bucks. And they've shown it. You know, the Bucks don't want to meet the Celtics because they just don't have an answer for Horford. That's, you know, just a, you know, awful matchup for them. You know, so I think that they can take down Milwaukee. And then it just comes down to, I think they're going to have to battle with Indiana in the the first round. They think they'll battle with the Bucks, and then, you know, you get the Raptors, and it's, you know, going into Toronto without home court advantage, that's been a house of horrors for the Celtics for a lot of years now. So that's, you know, that's just really tough to, you know, that becomes a big ask there. And that's, you know, why, you know, once they fell behind four or five games, you kind of knew, all right, well, they're going to have to win games in some place where it's going to be really hard to win games. And I think that's where it just comes to an end for this year's group.
That's interesting, because obviously Kawhi free agency looming and him like penciled in as either a Clipper or outside chance, I guess, the Lakers or whatever. But no, it's interesting to see what happens there. If they do make the NBA Finals, how does he not resign? But I guess we'll wait and see.
Yeah, but on the flip side, how does a guy ever ask to leave San Antonio? Yo, where all they do is make the playoffs and
compete for two. I know.
So it's, he's just a different guy.
Yeah, I was about to say, dude's a strange cat. Like,
he's well, I don't know him personally, but it definitely comes off that way.
Right. I don't like, that's why I mean, like, I don't want to say, I don't know the guy personally. It's not a knock against him, but he is definitely, when what we know of as superstars, he's definitely a different cat.
Yeah.
And he signed with New Balance. So,
hey, take the money and run. Yeah, exactly. All right, Keith. So, you know, it's been great. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yes, thank you so much, Keith. You
know, yeah, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No, absolutely. Thank you so much. Again, this is Keith Smith at Keith Smith NBA on Twitter. Follow him. And, yeah, thank you so much. He'll also be found on the Celtics blog. And, yeah, Keith, anything you want to plug before we let you go tonight?
No, that's it. Get a lot of free agency stuff coming for Yahoo Sports, and then Celtics coverage continues all the way through what, you know, hopefully will be, you know, a long season. Otherwise, there'll be a lot of off-season hand-wringing coming, and a lot of, you know, what-if scenario writing coming out of me, you know, if we get there, you know. So hopefully we get a lot more games to continue to write about.
Absolutely. Stay tuned. All right. Well, Keith, thank you very much for joining Celtics Pulse. And, yeah, you have a good night, man. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. I appreciate it again, guys.
No problem. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. So thank you, guys. We're going to wrap up the episode here. Celtics Pulse, as always, is brought to you by Tick Blitz. And, yeah, also we have a great promotion with Thrive Fantasy. So, yeah, if you go to at Celtics_Pulse on Twitter, right in our bio is a link, and they'll match your deposit. So, again, fantasy players, free money. Give it a shot. All right, guys, thanks for joining. Anything you want to add, John, before we end this, buddy?
No, I thought it was great. I thought he brought up a lot of great points. I've read a lot of Keith's materials, so all you Celtics pulsers out there, go check him out on Twitter. He read some great stuff about the Celtics as well as just the NBA in general. The guy's a pretty informative dude. So, you know, maybe we can get him back on at the when the season all concludes. And
absolutely.
And see what he feels about the free agency. But, yeah, great podcast. And I guess it's all in the West Coast hands.
Yeah, and we also proud. We laid off of Terry. We didn't give Rozier too much shit tonight. So good for us. We're good guys. We're true Celtics fans.
I just asked the one question about is Ralph Kyrie. That was it. I'm not gonna bamboozle Terry.
So do you think we should release Terry Rozier today?
No. Yeah. Right.
Okay. I'm totally kidding. Yeah. So I know it's been bad, but I mean the guy's track record and he's you gotta at least try to give him a chance to play through it, I guess. I don't know. I'm out of explanations for Terry.
Somebody's gotta go to him in that locker room that's a veteran and say, listen, look, man, we all appreciate what you did for us last year when Kyrie went down. We know that you have those certain skills, but that's not what the team needs right now. And you forcing it when you're on the floor is being a huge detriment to the flow of this team.
Or how about just play within open shots? I mean, that Milwaukee game, he had open shots in a very close game, and he just couldn't knock them down. I mean, it was
one after another. I think he's mental. I think he's just pushing
himself. He's in his head.
He just needs to calm it down, play point guard like a backup point guard does. Don't do anything stupid. Play good
defense. Try to knock down open shots.
Facilitate the ball.
Sorry, we still love you, mainly because we have to, but
you know, we will never forget Scary Terry and
never
Bledsoe jerseys and all that. All right, well, I think we're going to wrap it up here. So thanks again for joining Celtics Pulse. You know, make sure to subscribe, and you guys have a good night.
Hey, everybody, have a good night. Be safe out there.